This episode of the Coin Spice Podcast is brought to you by Cash Shuffle, because what you do with your money is your business. To give this new product a try for fungibility and privacy, head on over to electroncash.org, download their latest wallet 4.0.0, and give it a spin. CashShuffle.com for more information, because what you do with your money is your business.
What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice Podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
What is really going on, crypto savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief out of coinspice.io, back with another episode of the Coin Spice Podcast. And actually, I'm continuing my conversation with Jeffrey Tucker, who of course is the editorial director out at the American Institute for Economic Research, AIER, and author of the new book, The Market Loves You, Why You Should Love It Back, which is published by AIER and available right now on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. Last episode, we discussed his book, and I urge you to listen and then go buy a copy for yourself. But during that, towards the end of that conversation, I took the opportunity to ask him a little bit more about his feelings right now regarding the cryptocurrency ecosystem, how he finds it, how he sees it, and he sort of threw me a curve. He started talking about friendships, the ones he's lost, and the toxicity, I guess would be the word, of the current state of the space, and tribalism and all that good stuff. I found it really interesting, and I figured it deserved its own episode, so I split it down so you could focus in on it and have a listen. Tucker's always worth hearing, regardless of what you ultimately think of his views. He's spoken all over the world about Bitcoin, cryptocurrency in general. He's head of the and founder of the Atlanta Bitcoin Embassy. He put on one of the first ever cryptocurrency conferences way back in 2014. He's definitely someone worth grappling with. So without any further ado, here is part two of my discussion with AIER's editorial director, Jeffrey Tucker, author of The Market Loves You, Why You Should Love It Back, his views on the current state of the cryptocurrency ecosystem.
Yeah, and it's a perfect segue to sort of the nascent market of the last 10 years that's kind of appeared, and which you alluded to earlier, that you do have some authority in, which is the cryptocurrency market. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, before I let you go, to kind of get your general sense of it. I mean, we're 10 years out. You've spent about two-thirds of that time knee-deep, some say obsessively, talking all over the world. A Bitcoin evangelist. You also put out your own shingle with the Bitcoin embassy in Atlanta. You're an advisor to, you know, hedge funds and, you know, God knows what else. you're out there. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, where's your sense of the market, and kind of weave that a little bit with the market being a you know, ultimately a benevolent force, because for a lot of us, it is, I think, kind of, it's easier for us to see it as the Darwinian struggle rather than what you're
right. Like. Well, and you certainly get that impression from the crypto Twitter sphere. It sounds like a Darwinian struggle. Anybody who wants to understand crypto really needs to ignore Twitter. I'm sorry to say, but because it's such a vicious world out there. You know, 20 years ago, nobody imagined that anything remotely like Bitcoin was possible. Once it was created, not by a high-end academic or a treasury official or, you know, somebody at the Federal Reserve, but by Satoshi Nakamoto, whom, you know, nobody knows who that is, really. And it was distributed in the commons on an email chain and, you know, a result of really decades of innovation. Just this perfect combination of technologies to finally create a new money for the internet and the digital age. And it was a glorious thing to behold. And I guess at this point kind of an OG in the space, but and a lot has happened in the meantime. You know, the most, I guess, you ask somebody on the street today, like, we think about Bitcoin, they'll say, wait, didn't that crash? So everybody's knowledge is like a year old, you know, for regular people's knowledge. I think the so-called crash of 2018 will be just like the crash of 2013, the crash of 2016. So, like, in other words, it's going to disappear in the long run trends. Like, we're not even going to notice it. I've noticed people starting to talk about it much less now that the markets are, I don't know what the, I didn't check the figures before the podcast, but year over year, I mean, they're up vastly more than the stock market, which was, by the way, it's been flat ever since, more or less kind of flat, except for day trading, since Trump's trade war. So this guy's like
right
in the world. But so crypto's proved to be an extraordinary investment. And if you ignore just this, the wild run up in the latter months of 2017, it's actually, you know, on a logarithmic chart, it's actually just been up, 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 and it's just great. Now, I woke up this morning, as I do many mornings, thinking about the scaling problem.
Okay.
I'm not a normal person. The debate in the community really frustrates me now, because there are a lot of people out there who don't understand why Bitcoin is valuable, where money comes from, what money is supposed to do. They think there's such a thing as a store of value, as if it's a real thing. It's not. And don't understand that the utility of the money is its ultimate source of value. And so they're very confused. And so, you know, what happened after 2014 is that Bitcoin was not ready. It was unable to adapt to its use, and it was a real tragedy. And when it became just almost useless just extremely slow and very expensive for actual use, that was a big change that happened with the Bitcoin protocol itself, and personally very disappointing, devastating to me. I still have yet to understand, like, what happened where Bitcoin failed to adapt. And I think a lot of it just stems from ignorance, or maybe there's more going on. I don't really know, but of course, you know, I didn't like the fork of Bitcoin Cash when it happened any more than anybody else did. But, you know, it became necessary. Yeah, it became necessary because Bitcoin just was unable to achieve its function. And nowadays, people are like, oh, they think it's a race between BTC and BCH. It's not. It's ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't actually matter what the price is. The point is whether it's useful or not. And even now, after all these years, BTC is actually not a useful currency, except in a very narrow way. And people say, oh, it doesn't matter if you use it or not. Well, that's changing the standards. You know, like, for years, I told everybody, look, here we have a currency that's free of government, it's almost free to use, and very fast, and it's peer-to-peer with no intermediaries. And my God, that's a perfect case. Like, that's perfect. Now, suddenly, people are like, oh, no, you're not supposed to use it. You're supposed to just be a hodler, you know? It's a store back. It's like, you know, I don't think you get it. But let me just immediately answer some objections, because people look at the market cap and go, well, look, clearly you're wrong. BCH is not as high as Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's winning. Look, Bitcoin has the advantage of being a first mover, a legacy, a currency that's
a network effect, right?
Yeah. And it's a network effect, and it's used in half, you know, as in every trading pair in the crypto world, Bitcoin's the other half. So yeah, it's going to maintain that. But I think, you know, long term, I think we've got a serious problem, and I the Lightning Network can't come along soon enough. But I'm actually slightly tired of hearing about it, because it's been 3 years since I first heard about it.
Yeah, 18 more months. Yeah.
Yeah, and so of course this is why the whole crypto economy is so now diversified, because everybody's trying to figure out, you know, what can we release that's networkable and scalable to build the kind of financial world of the future. And that, I think, is the right questions we need to be asking. I wished that Bitcoin had gone that way, but I totally also reject these people out there who think there can only be one crypto. I mean, these people who say this are really no different from the people who think there can only be one fiat currency, the dollar. You know, the world needs about a dollar standard.
I loved your, when people were asking, because you'll, from time to time, you'll, and I always find it inadvertent, but you'll sort of step into it on Twitter of the little dumb tribal wars, just by something, you know, rather innocuous. And, you know, maximalism, blah, 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 blah. And you, I loved your retort. You said, I'm a competition maximalist, right? You're a Mungarian, right?
Yeah. And let's just, I can give a very quick defense of this position. So a lot of people, when they think about crypto and money and its role in our micro and macroeconomic affairs, are imagining some sort of a world of perfect competition, in which we already know what money is, and so we codify it and we use it, and then it becomes this kind of neutral good.
That's a good point.
But that is not actually the way the real world works. What we learned from Bitcoin is that money can be an adaptive, innovative, entrepreneurial technology. By the way, Menger said that about money anyway. I mean, if you go back to his writings, he said this, that it was always an experiment, the trial and error to discover what money should be. So we're still in that situation. The reason why we have all these different currencies and all these different brands and things in this wild crypto competition is because everybody has a different innovation. We're testing out what money should look like, and we'll never stop doing that. And that's okay. In the same sense that, you know, in the market for shoes, we're still trying to figure out what shoes look like, you know?
Seriously.
You know, and that's okay. So this is my answer to the people who set up these kind of, you know, ceteris paribus, trinity, equilibrium, perfect competition models and say, look, there should only be one money. Okay, well, I'll grant you your perfect world. You know, I don't know. You give me a piece of paper with it all mapped out and with the math and I'll give you an A+. But we live in a world of uncertainty. We're still not sure all that money can do. We didn't know until 10 years ago, 9 years ago, really, that money could perform both the job of being a medium of exchange and a means of payment. Like, we didn't know that, you know, on a geographically non-contiguous basis. We didn't know this. So rolling down payment system into the medium of exchange and stuff. So like, why aren't we humble? Why don't we look at that and go, you know, maybe we don't know everything. We need the market process to unfold so it can teach us the right way instead of just being pompous intellectuals or, you know, arrogant tweeters. You know, why don't we just like pull back a little bit and say, look, you know, I don't know everything. We don't know entirely what money is. Only recently been subjected to any kind of competitive, you know, unfolding of market process. That's only been going on a few years. Let's see what happens. Let's let it roll forward and defer to the world around us and get and start treating money as a real good, a real service that should be subjected to choice and competition.
And I love that because you're also not afraid to weigh in on what you believe at the present moment money is in the digital sense. And I remember talking to you a couple of years ago at Freedom Fest in Vegas, and I always bring it up because you're so terribly kind to my wife and I, and we pulled you aside to do an impromptu interview. And I was a Bitcoin Cash partisan. And I was wondering, I really don't know. He could go either way. And so I remember asking you, and you just went off. You went, don't tell me that this was supposed to be digital gold in a store of value. And I was like, oh, here he goes. He's right. You know, I loved it. I love the fact that you will, at the one hand, say, look, I'm with you guys, and I'm guessing at it, and we're groping and figuring it out together. But also, look, I mean, it should be useful. You know, people in Venezuela, you know, in Uganda, and New York City should be able to use this just the same. And, you know, I like it that you can straddle both of those worlds.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I try to say what I know and also what I don't know. But one thing I do know is that for anything in the world to have value in an economic sense, it has to be useful. One is connected to the other. If you detach your theory of value from a theory of use, do not talk in economics anymore. You're talking about some mythical world. It's just complete nonsense. So I get very frustrated with the maximalists for this reason. And by the way, can I tell you, I do not understand the attitude of people who inhabit this kind of maximalist world, who turn on me so viciously and violently. Like, it's just beyond me. I don't even work in the crypto industry. You know, I'm an editorial director of the American Institute for Economic Research. You know, I of course I'm like all of us, you know, have some crypto holdings, but that just, I mean, I'm looking at this purely from an intellectual point of view. But the loathing and the disdain and the violence and the hatreds out there are just utterly shocking to me. Like, it was a couple of weeks ago, I woke up an old friend of mine. I guess because I was on some show and they pulled a clip of me where I was, you know, kind of had a wry smile and it talked about like how you can't really use Bitcoin for exchange.
Right. There was
it went viral on Twitter. I always ignore these things when they go viral. It's like, you know. And so a person that I was friends with for years and it just texted me out of nowhere and on WhatsApp, I was early morning. Oh, you devastated me. I didn't realize you're a scam artist and you're involved with criminals and you're involved in fraud. And I was like, wait, who are you and what are you talking about and why? And, you know, nice to hear from you. What am I supposed to say? It was just like a level of insanity, and I've not even reconnected just because I can't account for these people. I just, and you're there too. You know what it's like, but mm-hmm. as best as, you know, I feel like the crypto world, I could sit over here and piously preach that we all need to like chill and whatever, but maybe this kind of hysterical partisanship is just part of the way the world works. Fortunately, within crypto, nobody has the right to impose his or her views on anybody else, and everybody can stay innovative, and that's good. It's not going to be subjected to the horrible wiles of human nature because it's a non-monopolized sector, unlike, say, central banking.
Right. And that is both the rub, the bug, and the feature, as we say. So it's you know, the forks of freedom. And it allows for folks to go off and do their own thing. And that's part of a market, as you began our conversation today, just talking about the sum of human choices and how that works. It's not always pretty. It doesn't always come wrapped in a bow, but
that's right.
We're starting to see.
And how glorious it is. I mean, I just when you were talking, I got a little bit of rise in my heart and soul because like the big picture here is that now for the first time in hundreds of years, probably, we've got a money that really is part of the matrix of exchange, choice, benevolence, and love. And that is a real hinge of history. Nothing will ever be the same. No matter what the price is tomorrow, next week, next year, even 10 years, nothing's ever going to be the same. After this innovation, we've finally achieved the thing I never thought was achievable. I never thought was technologically possible. It is possible. It's a reality right now, and I think it's going to fundamentally change the relationship of the individual, or I should say, the relationship of society to the state.
Boom. I don't know. There's a better way to end it. Fantastic. You sometimes you just speak in prose. It's so it's, I love it. But anyway, before I gush too much more over you here, where can people find your work? Where can they follow you?
Oh, good. So American Institute for Economic Research is at AIER.org. We're running, I think, some of the best content out there these
Agreed.
Days.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's getting better and better, and I'm really leaning in hard. We've got a great publishing program. I put my book out there as a kind of a test case, and it's sold really, really well. You can get it at Amazon. Just look up The Market Loves You, and I'd appreciate some sweet reviews, by the way. it's selling very, very well, and I'm really happy about that. And, of course, I'm at Twitter at Jeffrey A. Tucker.
Wonderful. We'll get out there and buy The Market Loves You, Why You Should Love It Back. It is published by AIER on Amazon for $18, a song, $20, a little bit lower than 20 for paper, $5 for Kindle. Mm-hmm. I'd say you can't afford not to buy it.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
In any case, thank you so much again for coming on. We do appreciate it, Jeffrey. And best in all your endeavors.
Okay, very much appreciate the time. Thank you. Bye-bye.